孩子。
During the time I served a congregation in Prince Edward Island, we had a man named Marcelo Orella come to visit us and do a special service and to present to us Christ in the Passover. Marcelo was a Messianic Jew, one of those people who still practices the Jewish customs, remembers the Jewish feasts, but he came to share with us as one who believes in Jesus, or as he would say, in Yeshua in Hebrew. He came and kind of illuminated for us the Seder meal, the Passover meal, and the various elements that are a part of that, and it was really enlightening for me. It was really kind of the first time I had been exposed to and had presented to me the Jewish context in which Jesus is participating in the Lord's Supper, and I really appreciated that. So what we're going to do today, we're going to go back into the Old Testament scriptures. We're going to start in the book of Exodus chapter 12 today. We're going to look at the roots of this meal that we commemorate on a regular basis in our gatherings. We're going to look back at the Passover a little bit. We're going to talk about what transpired there, some of the elements of that particular meal. Then we're going to jump ahead to our passage in the Gospel of Luke and look at that event in the light of what Jesus is participating in, because obviously what we do today is a little bit different. But I want to do this not just to go back into the roots of why we do this and how it came about that we participate in this, but also because we are moving toward the cross. We are in the journey in our studies this month, moving toward the passion of Christ, and I really want us to be thinking about the heart of Jesus as he goes through this, because even when we read in Luke chapter 22, and I'll talk about this in a few minutes, I'm absolutely amazed at the heart of Christ as he's breaking the bread and blessing the cup with his disciples. There's some things that are worth observing there that I hope will maybe help us to keep this particular part of our fellowship and our worship from becoming ritual, because it does. I was saying to Darren just before the service, we were talking about communion a little bit today, and you know, by the end of the second century, the Lord's Supper had, according to church historians, had pretty much become a ritual. It had lost that initial simplicity that it was meant to have, just a thankfulness of heart from God's people. And so I just hope, I want to kind of maybe rekindle that, ask the Lord to rekindle that a little bit as today, so that we don't just do this because it's what we do every 4 or 5 weeks. You know, it's just something we include. It's so much more. This is a very meaningful meal of remembrance that we participate in. So let's go back to the book of Exodus. I'm going to read from Exodus chapter 12. I trust most of us are well acquainted with this particular period in Israel's history where they are in Egyptian slavery. They have been for about 4 centuries, and God orchestrates a plan of deliverance for his people, first by raising up a man by the name of Moses, to serve as the leader of this particular event in their history, along with the assistance of his brother Aaron. God directs Moses, as I'm sure you know, to go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to set the people of Israel free. Let my people go. To which, of course, Pharaoh is defiant. And in Exodus chapter 7 to 12, we read about the series of plagues that God sent against Egypt, aimed particularly at showing the powerlessness of the gods of the Egyptians. And the climax of these, of course, was the last plague, which was the coming of the death angel, and death would sweep over the entire nation, targeting the firstborn of every household of both human beings and even the livestock of the people of Israel. But to protect his people, God gives them the following instructions. So beginning in Exodus chapter 12, verse 1, here's what we read. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, "This month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animals you choose must be year-old males without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month. Excuse me. When all the people of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight, then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lambs. And that same night they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Do not eat the meat raw or cooked in water, but roast it over the fire, head, legs, and inner parts. Do not leave any of it till morning. If some is still left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it, with your cloak tucked into your belt, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt. This is the day you are to commemorate for the generations to come. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. And then I want to jump down to verse 21 and just read a couple more verses. Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood in the basin, and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. Not one of you shall go out the door of his house until morning. And when the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and side of the door frame and will pass over that doorway, and he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses or strike you down." If we go down to verse 28, then it says the Israelites did as Moses and his brother Aaron had commanded. And of course, at midnight, the death angel began to make his way through the land of Egypt to carry out his task. The Bible actually adds that there wasn't a house where there wasn't someone found dead. But of the households of the people of God, the households of Israel, death passed over them. As God promised, because a lamb had died, he saw the blood, and he passed over those homes. The blood of those lambs spread on the door frames in the homes represented, at their core, these three things. One, it served as a sign to distinguish between God's people and the Egyptians. Two, it served as a protection for them against death. And three, it marked the end of their days of captivity and the beginning of a brighter future in a land that long had been promised to them by God. And so they were to commemorate this meal every year. This was how they actually began their year. This was their New Year's dinner at the beginning of their calendar year. That's God's instruction. This was how they participated in it. And I did a little research over the years of this particular Seder meal and how it has been participated in over 3,500 years. And of course, the people of Israel still participate in this. This is still a tradition for many Jewish homes. The meal itself includes basically six items, along with some unleavened bread, or what's called matzah bread. And each of those elements represent one of the aspects of hardship by the Jewish people during their time in Egypt. Here's a list of how they worked. Roasted lamb, of course, symbolized the lamb that had to die and whose blood was sprinkled around the doors of their homes. A roasted egg is participated with, symbolizing the mourning of the Jewish people. Three, there was a collection of bitter herbs called maror, symbolizing the bitterness and suffering of the people during their enslavement. Four, there was a mix of apples and nuts and red wine called kereset, which was a reminder of the bricks and the mortar that they were forced to make. Fifth, there was a mix of green vegetables called karpas, symbolizing the hyssop branches, which were used to sprinkle the blood on the doors. And then there was also glasses of wine, which according to Jewish tradition, were actually consumed on four different occasions during their Passover celebrations. And I'll talk about that again in just a moment. And so for 3,500 years, as I said, Jewish people have shared this meal together, some today celebrating it with an understanding of Jesus being the Passover lamb. Others have yet to still discover that. But they were remembering their liberation from slavery. They were remembering their deliverance from that oppressive time in their lives, and taking time through that particular meal to give thanks to the Lord for what he did. I was also, in talking with Darren before the service, one of the things that's a little different for us when we participate in the Lord's Supper, for the Jewish people, this was a family affair. They would actually start by lighting candles, and then they would offer a blessing, and then they would include their children in this particular event, and the children would ask questions. And then the parents had the responsibility of answering their children. This is why we participate in this meal. We do so to remember what God did for us so many centuries before. Here's a couple of the questions they would ask. One child would ask, on all other nights we eat herbs and vegetables of any kind. On this night, why do we eat bitter herbs? Another question that's asked, on all other nights we eat our meals in any manner, and on this night, why do we sit around the table in a reclining position? Now that's interesting, because we read Jesus reclining with his disciples when he participates in it. But I think that's a good reminder for us at the very least, and this is the only reason I mention this. It's a good reminder for us that as parents, it's our place to explain to our children why we do this. It's our responsibility to say, you know why we participate in this meal? Because Jesus laid down his life for us. You know, we were excluded from heaven, but Jesus changed that. And so he's our Passover lamb. He's our means of our salvation. And so now we jump ahead 1,500 years to the Gospel of Luke. Jesus comes, the Messiah comes. He comes teaching and healing and demonstrating his power in so many ways. And then, of course, we come to the final week of his life, and as we touched on in our message a couple of weeks ago, he's approaching Jerusalem the week before the last Passover meal he would have with his disciples. And people are celebrating, hoping that Jesus is going to bring relief to them. But he, in fact, weeps bitterly over the city because he knows the impending judgment that's coming on them, because he says, you missed the day of my visitation. They missed the day of Jesus coming. In fact, they just missed who he was. They recognized him as a teacher, but they missed that he was their Messiah. And so because of that, judgment fell on Jerusalem in A.D. 70. But he sets up a time. He arranged to celebrate this one last Passover meal with his disciples. And they arranged to do so in the upper room of a home. And then, as we read earlier in Luke 22, verse 14, says, when the hour came, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table, and he said to them, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat it again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of God. Now, we can just look over that very, very quickly, but I want to pause and just get you to think about what Jesus is saying. He says, I have eagerly desired to eat this meal with you. There's two words in the Greek there that put emphasis on this particular passage. The idea, he says, I have craved, we could say, with desire to eat this Passover with you. He's not just saying, I'm glad to have Passover meal with you guys. I am thrilled to have this Passover with you. Now, what strikes me about that is because Jesus knows what's awaiting him when they leave the meal and they go to the Garden of Gethsemane, where we're going to be next Sunday in our message. He knows the agony he's going to suffer there. And then he knows what's going to follow through the night and through the next day. The cross is only hours away. And yet in this moment, he's looking at his disciples as they're reclining around a table, and he says, oh, I've so desired to eat this with you. See, the reason is because the Jewish Passover is about to find its long-intended fulfillment. As the lamb that was slaughtered and its blood was sprinkled over the door of the homes of God's people 1,500 years earlier, now another lamb is about to die, the last necessary lamb. Jesus is about to lay down his life to suffer and to die and to spill his blood so that death can from that day forward pass over all of God's people. Jesus, the Lamb of God, the one God sent for the very purpose of bringing an end to the hold that death has on all people because of sin, is about to let himself be slaughtered. The words of Isaiah the prophet might come to mind for some of us here. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. But I just wanted you to think about that for just a moment. Jesus knew what was coming, and yet he says to his disciples, oh, I have craved this moment. I have so deeply desired to have this Passover. See, because there's something's about to change. The reason for celebrating the Passover is about to have a significant alteration, although many Jews still do not see that. And so then we read in the next verse, verse 17, Jesus says, after taking the cup, he gave thanks and said, take this and divide it among you, for I tell you, I will not drink again of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes. Now, this is just the first time of two times. Did you notice when we read this, there's two occasions when Jesus takes a cup? Okay, there's actually four, as I said, in the Jewish custom, in the tradition of the feast. One is at the very beginning of the meal before the children ask their questions and they recount the Passover story and their time in Israel. And then there's one at the beginning of the meal. I believe that's what Jesus is doing. This is the second cup of the four that Jesus raises and gives thanks and says, take this and divide it among you. In Jewish custom, the blessing would be, blessed are you, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who creates fruit of the vine. And so he takes this cup and he blesses it. And then it says, immediately after that, he took bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Now that statement proposes a change right there to what the disciples had been accustomed to remembering. See, for them, they're remembering 1,500 years ago and what God did. Jesus says, now we're going to change things up. Now I want you to remember me. Not what God did then. Remember what God's doing now. Because this is going to change things for the future. Forever. Remember, God said, we read it in Exodus 22, or in Exodus 12, celebrate the feast of unleavened bread, because it's on this very day I brought your divisions out of Egypt. They were commanded, they were instructed to participate in that. But Jesus is just shifting the focus for them. He says, now remember me. Why? Because there's another deliverance that's about to happen. There's a new day of hope that's coming. Death is about to be judged once and for all. It will no longer be the ruling reality, and pardon for sin is also about to be offered. And then it says in the same way in verse 20, after the supper he took the cup, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. And so that just enhances what he just said. Now I want you to remember me, because we're establishing a new covenant. This is the fulfillment of what Jeremiah the prophet said in Jeremiah chapter 31. I will make a new covenant with my people in those days, not like the covenant I made with them before. So now it's going to be a covenant established in his blood. No longer the blood of lambs from 1,500 years earlier. Now the focus is on the blood that he's about to shed. Now, listen, honestly, I don't think the disciples had much clarity on this. I'm not sure that they understood what Jesus was saying until after he rose from the dead. Then the clarity came. And the practice of participating in a time of remembrance became a part of their customary practices. And the church for almost 2,000 years has had this simple meal of remembrance that we call the Lord's Supper. Sometimes we call it communion. Sometimes it's called the Eucharist. The word Eucharist is in some ways the most accurate, because it comes from the word that means to give thanks. Eucharisto. Give thanks. The word communion actually comes from the Greek word koinonia, which we tend to translate as what? Anybody? Fellowship. Fellowship. We're having fellowship together as people of faith in the Lord. But we're also having the Eucharist. We're giving thanks together for what Christ has done. But both those words accurately depict what we do when we participate in this memorial meal. We remember what Jesus accomplished through his suffering and resurrection and say thank you. Now, the blood of our Lamb spread on the doorframes of our hearts when we come into a relationship with Jesus Christ, now it represents these three things for us. One, it serves as a sign to distinguish between those who are Christ and those who are not, between you and I as God's redeemed people, and those who have yet to know Jesus as their Savior or still yet refuse to believe in him. Two, it serves as our protection against death and judgment. We're remembering that when we participate in this meal. And it also marks our freedom from captivity to sin to positions of being on our own journey as God's redeemed toward our eternal home. We're awaiting the coming of Jesus. In fact, even when Paul says in his account in 1 Corinthians 11 of the Lord's Supper, he says, we proclaim the Lord's death until he comes, right? So we know he's coming, and we continue to proclaim that he died for us. And as a result of that, we have been liberated from the fear of death and the consequences of our sin, all because Jesus gave his life. This is what God did for us. This is our deliverance. This is the power that God demonstrated at the cross to rescue and to save us. And so we still include it as part of our gatherings as the church today. Now, to kind of wind this all up before we participate. We understand that we're not reenacting the Jewish Passover when we do this. If we were, there would be a whole lot more food on the table, which I am personally in favor of, if you'd like to have some discussion about that. You know, it's interesting. I'm so thankful we have this memorial meal. But I did a study with my previous congregation. We actually kind of laid out the Passover meal without the roast lamb, but we laid out all of the ingredients, and we talked about the Passover, and I said, no, you know, one of the things we need to understand is when the early church, if you read church history, certainly through the first century and maybe even a little bit beyond, they would typically get together on a Sunday night because people worked, all right? We had Sundays off for a long time, but for them, the Sabbath was their day off in Jewish culture. So usually on a Sunday night, they would get together and they would have a common meal in which they would take time to remember and give thanks to the Lord for making them God's people and delivering them from sin and death. It was much more of a meal time. But we do that very rarely now. We've simplified it in the bread and the cup, and that's okay because there are still symbols in that for us of what Jesus did. He shed his blood. And so we drink a cup reminding us of that. His body was given for us. He suffered and gave his life. And so we eat the bread as reminders of that. It's a simple meal, but it still holds deep value for us.